This is Roots Pod.
Wire for Diaz, cutting it all the way across. Go!
Welcome into Roots Pod. This is Aaron. I've got Jack with me to talk about the last two games, about Pittsburgh and Sacramento. Jack, who introduced, I think, heat maps to the blog. He was the first person to post a heat map on the blog, and so he's joining me here on the podcast this week, and then in a little bit we'll talk with Peter about next week's now increasingly must-win fixture against Miami FC. But Jack, welcome. I wish it were under better circumstances.
I guess it's good circumstances that John's on vacation. We're happy. We're happy right. For that. So
happy for that. So let me set the scene. 2 weeks ago, Roots are coming off a landmark 1-0 win over probably the best team in the league, Louisville City. And we're sat here on this podcast asking ourselves, hey, would sixth place be a disappointment? And apparently, we angered some of the gods with that discussion because whatever run the Roots were on is emphatically not one they are on now. In the two games since then, they've surrendered 10 goals and only scored two, which is not a winning formula. So against Pittsburgh Riverhounds, Junior A2 had a brace, and then they got one each from Robbie Mertz, Sean Suber, and Canardo Forbes. And mercifully, the game was taken off of over-the-air television, preempted for coverage of Donald Trump's the attempted assassination of Donald Trump. And it didn't get any better after that for the Oakland Roots. They welcome in Sacramento Republic. This game is slated to be on CBS, like real honest-to-God CBS. But again, blushes were spared by the occurrence of a barely precedented event.
It might be us.
Maybe it's us. I would prefer this particular pattern where major world events happen. They coincide with terrible performances.
The major world events will continue until
the Roots morale improves.
Until the Roots performances improve.
So the Sacramento game did not get off on the right foot. Everyone's pumped up, but Kieran Phillips got the first of his two in the fifth minute. Shane Wheat and Nick Ross scored before halftime. Kieran Phillips got the latter half of his brace in the 46th minute, and then Trevor Amon made sure that most of the crowd left early with a goal in the 85th. The only redeeming thing that happened here, Johnny Rodriguez had a brace. I would also say that Camden Riley put in several incredible inch-perfect tackles in the first half, probably single-handedly prevented it from being 5-0 instead of 3-0 at the break, but I mean, we are clutching at straws here. So I don't know. It's really difficult to know where to start with this because this was so different from what we had seen for the previous month and a half.
It is. It's like a completely – what's jarring is it's like the control that the team had, like since Gavin's been appointed, has been like – they've been in control of every game. They've managed to pressure teams in places that they want to. They've managed to like control the ball in like effective ways for like the first time all year. And like these last two games, they've been completely stuck. They've been trapped behind, I know like they can't get through. They couldn't get through Pittsburgh's midfield, and they couldn't like do anything against Sacramento's again. It was the same kind of, it was reminiscent of how the season started, where it's just like you see some effective possession, you see some possession, but you don't see any way to effectively break it down. There's no end path that's coming with what's going on.
Yeah. And I was sort of, I think the one thing that was holding some of us back from being like, this is clearly one of the two or three best teams in the West, is that they were relying on, they were going to have difficulty coming back. Right. And I think one thing that has been, a through line through these last two games is that they gave up a really early goal. And, you know, right. Like you said, this team has had a lot of control, but they haven't, Even during that successful run, they weren't really punishing teams, you know, like one or two goals every game. And like that is a recipe that requires you not to give up an early goal for the most part. And they just got maximally punished for that in these last two.
It's like something happens at the beginning and it causes massive unravel. It's the opposite of, it's like everything. And I mean, it's two back-to-back mistakes by like attack Sean Diaz playing like crazy passes in back-to-back games, which is something that's so uncharacteristic like of both of them. I don't know. At some point, like if you're going to have your really reliable players doing things like that, like, I don't know. It's just hard to start games like that.
I sort of wonder to that point if they kind of psyched themselves out. I floated this thought on the blog because we didn't really have a chance to air it last week, you know, in a discursive format. But I kind of wonder, because we saw them do this earlier in the season, if they basically threw the Pittsburgh game thinking that, like, look, we're better than Pittsburgh, but also it's a cross-country trip, which probably something else we should stick a pin in. How we feel about that Louisville City game now, having seen what happens when this team travels cross-country. But put that to one side. They're like, you know what? The Sacramento game, this game is on CBS. This is against a rival. We need to show out for this game. And I just sort of wonder if that had just precisely the opposite effect that you'd want it to have. If they adopted that mindset and they came out, they obviously came out flat against Pittsburgh. I don't think there's any denying that.
No, yeah, that was, I mean, Pittsburgh also did come out flying.
They did. And they also followed that performance up with another three goals. So like maybe they've turned a corner.
Yeah, it's just, but I mean, also the Roots helped them turn that corner.
Yeah, yeah. That was not a great performance by any measure. But to my eyes, a lot of the issues in the Sacramento game seem to come with guys taking a beat too long to make decisions. And they just got punished over and over because Sac was on them from the moment they received a pass. And if you made any mistake, had any hesitation at all about what you were going to do, that was it. That was the game. And I think that characterizes a bunch of what we saw in the first half especially. And it may also help to explain Tim Sorrell's performance, which, I mean, he looked good in his couple of cameos earlier in the season, and this was, he did not acquit himself well in this game.
It is hard because like which of those five shots is he supposed to save? But also, like, there were six shots on target and five of them went in.
Well,
like, at some point, it can't be five out of six of them.
Yeah, it can't be five out of six. And I will agree with you with the last four goals. The first goal, I mean, it's tough. It's obviously a split second thing, but he committed early.
And Hackshaw pushes him really wide. Like he does, Hackshaw cuts off his angle and pushes him pretty far wide on that.
No one played that well. I thought he could have done better.
No, and Riley's a step behind. I mean, everybody's just a step behind.
Yeah, everyone's a step behind. But there were some other real nervy moments where the ball would come, you know, Sacramento sends it long, the ball comes to him, and instead of picking it up, he like tried to play it with his feet.
Yeah, no.
It's nearly catastrophic.
It's not something that we've had. But like last Roots goalkeeper, I mean, the Roots had two other goalkeepers that kind of tried this. They had the two guys that tried to unseat Paul Blanchett a couple of years before this.
Zeus and Diaz.
That's right. Yeah, great. Yeah. I remember some Roots guys, I guess. But yeah, no, there's something about the way that this team plays with the frantic, like they have to make a lot of like last second tackles and a lot of, you know, they're set up to have to do that. Mm. Having a goalkeeper that like plays balls quickly with his feet, like adds to that chaos in front of goal. And it's like not a pleasant watch.
It's not good. And you could see Hackshaw getting visibly frustrated with it in the moment too. And I kind of wonder if that had a ripple effect, but there were moments like that the entire game. They got a, another one that really stuck out to me is they got a free kick around midfield and Matt Soso runs 20 yards to take it quickly and does literally nothing with it. I think it turned into a like what you would call an odd man rush in hockey in the other direction. Mm-hmm. I was like, what are you guys doing? Like I think they were down 2-0 at this point. It's like, what are you doing?
There's been something jarring at the set pieces in the last two games too. It's been
really bad.
Like really, like, I mean, the second goal conceded, the first guy's completely unmarked at the far post who heads it across. And then it's like, it gets between Riley and Rodriguez who both kind of half have him.
Yeah.
And it's just, and you compare that to, no, their Roots are taking quick free kicks. They haven't, I mean, Hackshaw was offside on the one that was close. He has like a Darwin Nunez streak of like crossbar hitting. It's getting kind of awesome. But
it's if you get
not referred,
he turns it into Uruguay Diaz or Nunez. Maybe that's okay, but
it would be. Yeah. And I, you know, I asked Gavin about you know, choosing Tim Tyrell over Paul in the postgame show. And he kind of said, you know, that he wants these spots to be up for grabs and he likes the competition in the squad. And it seemed like something that, I don't know, it was a decision he was pretty,
confident
in after the game.
I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that I was, you know, worried about it at the beginning of the game, but it feels like if you want there to be competition for a spot, it's not arguably the biggest league match of the season.
And I think that's a big part of it. And I also, there's an emotional element to that. Paul Blanchett's a big part of Roots, like, culture and fandom at this point. He won the job 2 straight years. He's somebody that, means a lot to fans and people. They cheer every time he touches the ball in the crowd.
I have this theory that he must look terrible in practice because every single year, with the exception of last year, right, there's some like effort to find another keeper. And it's like, you guys don't need to overthink this. He's got it.
And he's been rougher this year than in the past. And it is kind of hard because when he's rough, like the only thing he does is stop shots. Like there's nothing else. I mean, he's not bad with his terrible, like awful with his feet or anything, but it's it's Tim Cyrell's
not
better,
a strong
I guess.
Suit.
No, but I mean, the shot stopping is, and when he's not stopping all the shots, it gets a little hectic. It gets a little extra hectic back there.
That's true. Also,
when you have the hectic defense, having the guy with like the best reflexes, probably in the USL, like on the back line,
kind of what you want, right?
It's what you want. Yeah,
it's like, what you want.
When you have those, and there's a lot of like guys kind of get lost because there's a lot of 1v1 defending and stuff. Like you want the guy that's quick, the guy that makes those quick reads. And yeah, I don't know, on national TV for that big game, or I don't know, alleged national TV.
Alleged national television.
The emotional.
International internet television.
The internet. I don't know. Yeah, no, it's an interesting, I don't know. It was an interesting choice. I don't know. It stressed me out a little bit.
It didn't pay off. You made a good point there at the beginning, though, like of that little discussion. It's not like there were a couple of moments, but overall, he was hung out to dry.
Mm-hmm. It would have been one of those, if Paul Blanchett made some saves, it would have been one of those, like, oh, heroic Paul Blanchett games. Like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, look at that. He's a hero kind of thing. Not any sort of normalcy.
And so I guess...
That's the bigger problem going on, is that, like, it seems like teams are... getting chances, the last two games, the chances have been easy, like both on set pieces and kind of in play, just like through being sloppy and giving, you know, these odd man rushes, basically, going the other way. It seems, I don't know, it's hard for me, I don't know enough to tell if this is a structural problem or if this is, Gavin keeps saying after the games that, you know, they're just not getting the effort in. He doesn't see the, you know, being a step late to these tackles and this kind of being when they are on those tackles and they are to those things, they can play with Louisville City. They can punch all the way up. They can play with Tampa Bay. Like they can be a team when they're on their game playing this really intense way where they have to win so many of these challenges and have to hang their goalkeeper out kind of to make some heroic plays once in a while. Like they can do that and be one of the best teams. But at the same time, when they do that and they get off to a slow start or something, like it looks like the opposite. It's the opposite of control. It's the opposite of that being able to punch above your weight. It's like a team that's struggling to do anything because they've set themselves a little bit back. Yeah, I don't know. Having forwards that have been kind of left out to dry in the last couple of games. I think Sherry really struggles when he doesn't have a lot of direct support. I mean, him in the build-up has been rough the whole season. And then Johnny's just a great goal scorer who has always been better with a little bit of support next to it. It's probably time. John Dwyer played 45 minutes against Sacramento. That's a good sign, probably.
That was a good sign. He also probably registered his first really positive offensive contribution.
And that's the only goal of this whole stretch that came, like, you know, building up through something. The Rasmussen pass was just directly over the top, and Johnny makes a great run.
Well, and also, I mean, shout out to Rasmussen for starting that whole thing by just bodying Jack Gurr into the boards.
Oh, yeah. Justin Rasmussen well acquitted Oakland Root already.
I have a sneaking suspicion that if there were VAR in this league, that one might have been pulled back.
Like the one play that goes through the team that's built through something is like through Dwyer. I mean, even though he struggled, even though he didn't get off so many of the things in that second half, like he can be the most talented player on the field. And I mean,
well, and what it showed, I thought, really in that Sacramento game is that there was an absence of anything in the middle. I struggle to understand exactly why, but I think a big part of it is that we've had that midfield base now for a few games of Napo and Danny Gomez, and it just got run through in this game.
I mean, and I think they're just kind of physically small compared to the midfields they ran into these last couple of games too. Just, I mean, having Riley in there looked better just because Riley is like a big guy that can hang with the other big guys, that can level them, that can, I don't know, that can be in there with that. I think Gomez has been kind of good the last couple of games. He's actually like playing a bunch and at like a pretty, I mean, the last three games have been against really good teams, and he's, I think, been one of the Roots like better players during a weird stretch.
I'm curious what the guys, you know, on the inside think about his performance against Sacramento, because it seemed to me, and this goes back to my earlier question about did they psych themselves out, that they identified Jack Gurr as a problem, the wing back for Sacramento.
Yeah.
And one of the ways that manifested itself is that most of the Roots attack went through the right side, through Memo Diaz and Jesse El Cedeno on that side of the pitch.
And Mfeka often times
himself over there. And one sort of downside of all that is we had some terrible spacing. But to get back to the point about Jack Gurr in the midfield, there were a number of times when Rasmussen would step up into the midfield to deal with a pass, to deal with a runner, to deal with someone on the ball, and the person who would fill in behind him would be a Sacramento Republic player.
Yeah.
And the sense that I got from watching this, because it seemed to happen five or six times at least, was that Rasmussen was mostly concerned about making sure Jack Gurr didn't punish them.
And I think it's the third Sacramento goal, the one that it is the third one. Jack Gurr, just Napo's kind of tracking him in like one of these direct, you know, rushes towards goal. And Jack Gurr just tucks himself inside and Napo follows him and just stays with him, because there was like, it was pure focus on like Jack Gurr's not going to, Jack Gurr did beat them.
Ultimately he did. The reason I'd want to know what the inside assessment of Danny Gomez's performance here was, is that it was stunning that no one filled Rasmussen's space when he would step up into the midfield in that defensive role. I would assume that if he's supposed to be doing that, if that's part of the game plan, then surely there has to be someone to get behind him and take that space.
Like one of your sixes is dropping in to,
right,
which to step into that space.
Would have
yeah.
been Gomez most of the time.
I would imagine. Because, I mean, Napo does tend to be the one that, I guess, of that midfield duo that presses more.
Well, in the first half, at least he was playing a box-to-box kind of role. He was running like he was playing a box-to-box role. Again, hard to know if that's exactly what was communicated in the game plan.
And the Roots weren't really getting to the other half of the box.
Yeah, that's true,
it was mostly just in the one box.
But I'd love to know if the problem over there on that left side is that Rasmussen is not supposed to step up, or that Gomez was just never tracking back.
Or that Gomez like doesn't, if they're asking him to track back, he just doesn't have the speed to get back.
In time. Because there was always someone attacking that space from Sacramento, and you saw the results.
It kept happening. But I mean, at the game against Pittsburgh, he had like the highest pass completion percentage on the team. And like USL gives you like a pass completion percentage in like the opponent's half, was the highest in that one in both games, and like second highest complete pass completion percentage against Sacramento again. And I mean, I think a lot of that has been some negative possession controlling passes, but we're starting to see some like forward breaking passes from him. He had the one that was called off when they gave the yellow card to Trayvon Reed. He hits a really direct ball forward that's kind of breaking some Sacramento lines, and the ref doesn't play an advantage for it. They struggle to move the ball so much through the midfield that having a guy who just is completing his passes and is kind of showing the ability to potentially be like a forward breaking guy, they like need to find cover for him if he's the one struggling defensively.
So I guess the big question, you know, going forward is, I mean, do you expect this to continue?
I think I mentioned this when I wrote about in the blog that I wrote against Pittsburgh, but they, are just, they're not getting the performances from like the top of the roster that you would kind of expect. And I think that like in order for this to be sustainable, like they're kind of going to have to. And I mean, I think the Dwyer and Jamakis, I guess, are the standout two players of that. Those are like your higher, those are your, you know, really high level players that aren't performing. And they're kind of different. On the Dwyer front, I do think it's kind of just time to start seeing him playing all the time. Because at this point, like, why not? If he's on the roster and he can bring something, like, he's not going
to
get...
Your lips to God's ears.
He's not.
Why not?
Why not? He's not going to get more... He's not going to get better if he's not out there. He's not going to become more ready. Unless they think he's, like, some serious injury risk. Which, like, man, you really should have known that before you signed him. He seems like he's in great shape. Like, just,
yeah, he might have lost a step, but
Dom Dwyer a step behind. Like, as a, I don't know, as a strike partnership with Johnny Rodriguez, kind of makes sense. Like a guy that Johnny can run off of can.
Yeah, is it worse than running out Trayvon Reed and doing whatever he did not do against Sacramento? I don't think so.
No, yeah, I mean, pretty much. There's a quality gap between him and, I mean, most of the other players in the USL when he's playing well. You want to get that guy out there with that quality gap. And then the Jamakis one's harder because like Memo Diaz is the team's starting right back. And like, that's not going to change unless he like starts really playing poorly. And that's just, I don't know. It's a redundancy on the roster that like when you're a USL team, you can't necessarily afford to have like a star level player that loses, you know, a star caliber player like that, that loses out to somebody else. Cause then, I mean, you're just seeing it. There's a redundancy there. There's such good outside back play on this team and such struggle in the midfield, sometimes out wide and all of these other places. It's, I don't know. I don't know. I don't really know how that changes unless like, I don't know if there's a USL trade deadline and if we passed it, but unless there's some kind of like actual roster shakeup.
There's a roster freeze at some point. John would know, but again, he's on vacation.
Yeah, no, bless him.
Well, so let me ask you, since you bring up the outside back play and Jamakis, right? And we kind of touched on this. But one of the things that when this run got going, it's not where we've been for the last couple of matches, but when the run got going, one of the adjustments that had been made was putting Camden Riley in to midfield.
Mm-hmm.
And as a much more defensive minded player in that position, which seems like something we've been missing the last couple of games. And obviously he ended up there for the second half in Sacramento, but by then the damage was completely done. You know, I think he was basically set up to fail there. Plus he had gone all out protecting the back, you know, in the first half, and I'm not sure how much juice he had left, but we are playing a center back in that left back position, you know, where Memo had been.
Yeah.
I mean, does this look different if we can figure out someone else to partner with Hackshaw in the back so Riley can move back into the midfield? Right. I mean, do you think it's that simple?
I mean, I don't necessarily know because I don't know, like, if Riley, like, I don't know if Riley's going to necessarily bring the things they need. Like, I mean, which partnership on the team necessarily works best with him? I still imagine that it's kind of Gomez. But the Riley's sort of chaos with Gomez's, I don't know, a little bit of measuredness hasn't necessarily been the best partnership so far this year. The thing I would kind of like to see again is just to get Hackshaw back in there.
In
the midfield. When he's playing well, he's just their best player. He's dominant when he plays well. And I mean, when he's in the midfield and he can really body guys and move guys around. And his, you know, like just his body control in and around the ball would, I don't know, really bring something. But that would, I mean, it would require Goggi or Logue to be at the level that I guess they want to see from those two guys.
I mean, maybe it's just been a simple matter of the fact that Goggi's been injured. Because I think I kind of
agree
with you.
I think that is part of it. Yeah.
Yeah, that Hackshaw in the midfield's the way to go. The problem seems to be that they think he's the best center back, too.
And I kind of, like, I do kind of, like, it is a redundancy problem. It's like, what do you do when your best center back is maybe your solution in the midfield?
yeah, right. Which position group are you sacrificing in?
Yeah, no. I mean, and it's, I think, you know, like, they are sort of, I mean, just with how many players are on the team, they're sort of still like structurally built to play a back three. It almost feels like with how many like center backs you want to get out there, and like Logue looked better in the back three than he has in the back two. And, you know, Memo Diaz can play left wing back much better than he's played left back going forward. And it's just a lot of these guys are still set up to play a back three that like doesn't work with the midfield that we have. So I don't really know what to do with that. Because again, you have more like, it's just more roster sort of redundancies. So like, I don't know, it's hard to judge because this is obviously like a really good team when they hit their highs. And they like obviously have lots of really good players that are like, I don't know, every player on this team we've seen put in like remarkable performances, like kind of at various points throughout the season. But getting it to all click with like the player group that they have, like feels difficult.
And then this is, I think, a point that we've kind of touched on before, that like the recipe that they have is really only one solution. And if it doesn't work, things go south.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's sort of exaggerating. I'm sure they have, there's some adjustments that can be made and whatnot, but it really feels like there's one mix of things that works, and they might need to find a second if they're going to make it, you know, to the end of the season in a positive position.
I guess the most positive thing is that, like, if they need to make a change and something super positive needs to happen, like, if Dom Dwyer starts playing well and a partnership of him, like, I don't know, I think Johnny Rodriguez could use another forward out there to play off of. And since they're not doing a bunch of just, like, crosses into Cherie, which is probably the thing that he's best for.
I would love to see that, personally.
I would love to see that, but it doesn't seem like that's coming. Getting Dwyer and Johnny out there like feels like something that could create goals, especially like if Lindo stays healthy and can play below them and be some sort of like creative force. I don't know, it's still about being stable behind that. They either when they have to play from behind, it's the lack of stability really shows. But when they're kind of playing on the front foot, when they're getting the ball, you know, when they're controlling the ball a little bit more, or at least controlling like field tilt a little bit more, they play a lot more confidently. They're able to feel, you know, they're making those challenges. It's not necessarily on the back foot as much, but that's hard when you go down early. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe the solution is just stop making dumb passes in the first like 15 minutes of matches and like see if don't do that against Miami and like see if maybe we can like kind of dominate the game in the way that we did in the few past couple ones.
You know, there is virtue in simplicity, isn't there?
Yeah, because that's the key difference. It's trying to come from behind is hard for this team. And that just might be true. Yeah. It might just be a team.
So just don't give up goals.
You might just be a team that struggles to come from behind. And, you know, they don't generate that many chances throughout a game, but yeah, they can, when they're at their best, you know, control where their opposition's playing and yeah, keep them out of dangerous areas. And like you have a lot, you have Hackshaw, you have Riley, you have, Gaggi, when he was healthy, was really good at just, you know, winning these 1v1s, just dominating them in a way that is dominant among the better teams in the USL. So maybe just don't go behind. Score goals, don't concede goals.
Yeah, score goals and don't concede them. I think that's probably a good recipe.
That's it, yeah.
Especially after the last two games when they've tried the opposite and it has not worked. Well, thank you, Jack, for coming on to help us do the dirty work of recapping those, I don't even want to call them performances, whatever happened on the pitch for those two games.
I'm happy to muck around.
You've done John Brown, that's for sure. You filled John's shoes and then some.
It's okay. I'm predicting a win against Miami.
That's good.
Just to put it out there. Yeah.
You got a score line?
1-0, Dwyer.
Oh, there it is. All right, we'll turn our attention now to the next fixture on the schedule, Miami FC. That's an away trip for Oakland. That's a brutal away trip. And I've got Peter here now as we're going to break down that matchup to the extent that we can. Miami's a bit of an enigma. Well, sort of. They're not an enigma in that they've been at the bottom of the USL power rankings for like maybe the entire season. They haven't won in 3 months. They are an enigma in that I don't know if anyone's writing about them. I don't know if anyone's covering them. If you look at the Miami FC hashtag on Twitter, what you get is a bunch of people who don't realize that Inter Miami, the MLS team, is named Inter Miami. So,
tweeting about Messi.
Yeah, they're all tweeting about Messi. Yes. Who is emphatically not on Miami FC. This season historically is a bit of a down year. You know, they had for a couple of years, they've been led by the sons of people you've heard of in English football, like Kenny Dalglish's kid and Tony Pulis's kid. And now they're not, and they have something like, what is their record right now? It's like 2-2-16 coming into this match. So, I mean, if ever there were a get right game, but Before we talk about Miami specifically, Peter, let me just put this to you, because we can talk about the opponent till we're blue in the face. If the Oakland Roots play like they have the last 2 weeks, it hardly matters. So I guess the first question as we think about this next game is, do you think that the Roots can turn the ship around in time? I mean, Miami thankfully doesn't look like a team where we got to do a full 180 here, but something's got to change. And I mean, do you think that the Roots can fix what's ailing them right now?
Yes and no.
That's a classic John Como response.
Well, I'll give you detail, and it'll be less than 45 minutes. So we're getting less classic John Como all the time. I think we were concerned when the Roots beat Louisville and we're going into Pittsburgh that we think that the Roots turnaround is real, but maybe it's not quite as good as it looks. And so when I say right the ship, I don't think we're going, I'm not saying right back to beaten Louisville, beaten Sac and Sac kind of results. But I think we can get back to fourth place in the USL West results. And I think we can do that relatively quickly. I continued to complain about this midfield when things were good.
You did.
And I am the most vindicated I have ever been.
It was absent against Sacramento.
And I mean, you don't have to agree with me that Dapo and Gomez can't get the job done to agree that at least we need Goggy back and we need Riley in the midfield replacing one of those two dudes.
So do you think, I mean, I put this question to Jack, is the solution as simple, right? Does it look as bad as it has simply because Goggy's been out and we've had to play Hackshaw and Riley in the back line? I mean, is that really the solution? Is it, and it just looks much worse than it really is because we had that cross-country flight and then every single opportunity was taken by Sacramento, and you could replay those games a bunch of times. They're not going to look nearly as bad. And really it's just down to this guy's coming back and now we're going to fix the biggest problem.
I mean, I think that is the biggest problem. I don't know that that's going to fix everything, but I think that is a necessary step one to fixing things. And I think that it's an available step one. And I think it's what, I mean, it's what Glinton was doing before Gocky got hurt. So it's not a big ask to say, please start him. Please move Riley back into the midfield.
Yeah.
Like, he was our best defensive midfielder and our best box-to-box midfielder when he was playing, you know, like when there was another person on the field with him. I don't know quite how to get to, like, I don't know what else is going wrong, I guess. I mean, I think that you made a good point that Sacramento just converted everything. You know, maybe Rasmussen isn't quite right. Maybe Diaz isn't quite right. And some of those things didn't come off. But really, I have said this in the DM that I have with Aaron and John, which is if the offense and the midfield and the defense all look bad, it's the midfield that's bad. You know, that's the one that means the defense is under too much pressure. The offense isn't getting the ball. The offense isn't getting the ball, so they can't score, and they're not getting the ball, so the defense stays under pressure. You know, it's like all of these things that are compounding because our possession is meaningless.
Yeah, at the very least, you'd want to start by fixing the midfield.
Yeah.
Probably, right? I mean, you can't fix everything all at once. You're probably going to start by switching up the midfield a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that that's the answer. And I think we need more ball retention, and we need more creativity in there. Because, you know, Napo and Gomez can successfully win the ball. And I think that that's kind of what they're there to do. Or at least that's what they've done when they're successful, is that they're these bruisers. But it's not enough to beat good teams. And sometimes it doesn't work against bad teams. Pittsburgh admittedly got a good result last week too. So Pittsburgh may have just finally righted the ship, and what they needed is an overconfident team with 3 hours of jet lag. Right. And it just sucks. It was us.
Yeah. Yeah. It was going to be somebody. I don't think we should disparage the midfield pairing of Napo and Danny Gomez too much. They were the midfield pairing when they beat Louisville City. So it's not like they're awful. Although I do think we should probably consider that maybe there were some mitigating factors there, right? Louisville had a long flight, and we saw the very next week what that does to a team. And so maybe we didn't get Louisville's best shot. I mean, obviously the Roots had something to do with it, but maybe we didn't get Louisville's best shot. But it's hard to look at what's happened the last 2 weeks and say that this is the midfield pairing you want going forward.
Well, I think the glass half full way to look at it, or rather what I would say if one of those two gentlemen confronted me over my statements on this podcast, is that they just can't be paired with each other.
Yeah.
Both of them need someone else who does the other things that they're not as good at. And putting them together just it means that they tend to become anonymous.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't matter how many times you force these good turnovers at the, you know, 10 yards past the Roots box, which they do, you know, with relative regularity. But then they're just giving the ball back, and then they have to do the same thing. Or alternatively, Sacramento pulls off something great and scores, you know. So I've harped on it all season. I'm still harping on it. I think that's what needs to be fixed. And I think that the thing to take from, I mean, not the thing to take from the SAC game. The list of things to take from the SAC game is primarily bad news. But yeah.
Yes.
On the first Roots goal, the Roots looked pretty good. You know, that was like a pretty exciting move that we would like to, that is replicable in some ways. You know, it was crisp passing and smart play, not great luck or hero ball, which was sort of the second goal, which is like Johnny Rodriguez occasionally is like, now is the time that I'm scoring. If we can get other shit right, I feel like the offense maybe can score, and maybe Dwyer's ready to freaking contribute.
So there's the glass half full. So, and we know that Gagi must be feeling better because he did play 45 against SAC, and maybe he comes back and we see that things are right. But as I alluded to, the things probably don't have to be all the way back to be successful against Miami FC, who's having a horrific season. They haven't won. I think, did we mention this? They haven't won since April 27th.
It will have been 3 months by the time this game is played.
It'll be 3 months. And they have a draw in there, just to be fair to them. They have picked up 1 point in the last 3 months, or in the 3 months that precede the match against Oakland Roots. So they're not in good form, to say the least. They leak goals like nobody's business. Actually, here's a stat that I bet you would not have predicted 2 weeks ago. This match will feature the teams with the two worst defensive records in the USL. Now, that's slightly misleading because Oakland has given up 35 in 21 matches and North Carolina has given up 33 in 18, I think. But it's still the case that the two teams with the most goals surrendered on the season are Oakland Roots and Miami FC. And so this could be exciting, or as their offenses show, this could be 1-0. Because in addition to bleeding all kinds of goals, Miami doesn't really score. I mean, they've had some flashes, two against Loudoun, two against Rhode Island. They did score two in that win over San Antonio 3 months ago, but it's not good. They've scored 20. They've surrendered 47. I mean, this is by far the worst team in the league. And if the Roots didn't have to fly 5.5 hours to get there, I'd feel a whole lot more confident about it. And they weren't coming off of two consecutive pretty terrible performances, but this opponent is not very good, is the bottom line.
I'm looking at the Miami lineup and I don't recognize anyone. And you know, like I am not, oh, sorry, Danny Barbier.
Yeah.
But that, you know, like, I'm not the most in touch observer of the Eastern Conference, but like, usually I recognize someone on most of these teams. So, you know, they have a guy with 5 goals and they have a guy with 4 goals, and that's not nothing. And none of those are penalty kicks. But that's sort of it. Like,
that's
kind of nothing else going on there.
Yeah. They signed a guy from Italy. Mattia Gagliardi, who was getting there were some low level rumblings that he might move on to greener pastures. And again, it's so difficult, like I said, to know what's going on with this team, because the only coverage we really get of them comes from the team website, which is not the most useful source of news about a team. He hasn't played in a couple of months. I suppose we could assume it was an injury, but I have no idea. He doesn't appear on any of the roster, so he's still there. They signed a guy out of Lexington in USL League One, Khalid Balogun, who scored on his in his first start for the team and then was taken out after 30 minutes in his next start. Again, you sort of assume that's probably injury-related, but I have zero idea. There appears to be so little going for this team. It's bad.
I mean, I think that if you were a Miami fan, of which there are apparently only 1,000 per their attendance records, you would be looking at the fact that they drew 2-2 with Loudoun and they lost 2-3 to Rhode Island. And both of those are reasonable results. And you know, I don't know. I didn't watch the highlights of those, so I don't know like how close those were, if they, you know, whatever. But signs of life, I guess. But man, the other results in that run are a 4-0 loss to Detroit, a 4-1 loss to North Carolina, and a 2-0 shutout by Charleston Battery. Like, it's grim. Yeah. Not only do they not have a shutout since their opening match, a win over Switchbacks, they haven't kept someone to 1 goal since May 4th.
That's stunning.
It's hard to believe.
It is hard to believe. Yeah, no, and I saw a little bit of that Detroit match. I mean, Detroit just sort of dared them to go long. I think it's probably the one thing this team is good at, honestly. And the thing is, they couldn't do it. You know, they were just incapable of going. They got a little bit of movement, but then Detroit made a sub, and that was it. That was the game. And what is that? It was a 4-0. Like,
yeah.
They're there for the taking. I wish I had some confidence that this Oakland Roots team would accomplish that taking, but
could take something that was there.
Yeah.
Accomplish the taking. real property law hours here.
Oh, it's getting dark. It's getting dark early in this particular season. No, that's not true. The Roots are miraculously still in third place in the West. Somehow.
It's funny.
Although if everyone wins their game in hand, the Roots drop to 11th.
No way. That 10th. Far.
They drop to 10th. Now, everyone can't win their games in hand because surely some of these people will be playing each other in their games in hand. Would you call this Miami game a must win, Peter? You think it's a must win?
I think that it is. It's like emotionally a must win. The Roots get a week off, so there is this chance for a reset to fix things. But I think that they'll be much happier going into that with 3 points. So, like, mathematically, no, it's obviously not a must win. But it does kind of seem like. It's almost like that good form won't have happened in terms of the need for the Roots to figure some shit out if they don't get 3 points in this game.
Yeah. I mean, I'm loath to call anything a must win in this league. I still have those memories from a few years ago where we were thinking they have to beat this Tacoma Defiance team, and they went in and they laid an egg, and we were like, well, that's it. And like, we scraped the bottom of the barrel in terms of views on the blog, on any article written about that game. We had like 12 people read the match recap after that game because I think everyone had given up. And then they got into the playoffs and they actually beat El Paso. And so this league is so bunched up. I do emotionally, if they lose this game, that's so deflating. To go from that run that they had of, what was that? It was 7 wins in 9, excuse me, with really quality wins to these shocking performances. And if you follow that up by losing to the worst team in the league, you feel like cracks would start to form. But anyway, do you think that's going to happen? Are we losing to the worst team in the league, Peter?
No, but this is like the least confident I've ever been picking 2-0 for the Roots. It's like 2-0, but it's like my second prediction isn't 1-0. My second prediction is like 0-3.
Mm.
No, I think that they can do it. And I hope that that's not just papering over cracks.
You know what? Even if it is just papering over cracks, getting another 3 points gives you some time in the playoff race. And there is a break after this game, right? I mean, so they play Miami and then there's a 2-week break until Loudon. So, I mean, that's another reason this is sort of emotionally a must win. If you go into that basically your bye week, having put up 3 of the worst results you can imagine,
mm-hmm.
like that's going to be rough. But I agree. I think they'll get it done. I think it's going to be pretty hectic though. I think it's going to be something absurd, like 4-3. I don't know. I get the sense that teams probably smell blood in the water when it comes to the Oakland Roots right now.
If you're an opposing attacker, you're going to try, you know,
yeah.
You're going to try your luck in weird positions because it's working for everyone else.
It's working. Yeah. So why wouldn't you? And I think they'll probably find some success, especially in the first half, since this team is very much a second half team. Even when they're not playing well, they're a second half team. So I think Miami's going to get some goals, but I got a feeling that, I mean, Miami's defense just looks so bad this year. And I, even if the Roots are half a step slower because of jet lag or something, I don't see how they don't score a whole bunch. All right, so wherever the watch party is this weekend, hopefully we run into you, and hopefully we are watching a positive performance from the Oakland Roots, not one that's going to make us tear our hair out again or wish that major world events might happen to preempt TV coverage. You know, hopefully we're spared of all of that stuff this weekend. If you see us out there, come say hi, and until then, up the Roots.